Truck Roy here. We're on the Riding Shotgun Show, and this is a special edition. We're going to go ahead and put this up as a supplement, and a lot of you guys are probably listening to it on Horace's website, because my guest is Horace here today. How you doing, man?
We're doing A-okay.
Yeah, you know, we've got an exciting event coming up with this conference in East Tennessee in the Knoxville area there, and you're going to be there. I'm going to be there. It's coming up on September 16th through 18th. And for all those listeners out there that want to make reservations, you can go to Stormfront, hit the donate button there, and donate $40 and say it's for the conference, and they'll put you on the roster.
It's actually $45.
$45, okay.
$45 carats.
Yeah, 45 carats, and they'll put you on the roster. And what we're going to do is it's going to be interesting. Everybody can kind of get their own hotels in the area there, and then to keep it from getting any trouble from the bad guys, we're going to give everybody a heads up on the location right before the event, so you can just put some contact information in there, your email or your phone number, or however you want to be contacted, and we'll make it happen. And man, I can't wait to meet you. I've never met you in person.
Well, I will be there with bells on. So,
all right,
and we'll be there. We're going to have a meeting no matter what, because we're not all coming in there. But old Bob Whitaker's going to be there. I'll be there.
Yeah,
a host of characters: James Edwards, Paul Frum, Sam Dixon.
Right.
Yeah, Truck Roy will be there. I guess we'll be emceeing it, as they call it. I don't know if that's the appropriate word for it, but we'll be. We'll be talking through it, as well as I'll be giving a presentation. So it will be a formal introduction to a consistent message, and it will be not like anything I don't believe most of the attendees have ever attended before.
That's right. We're going to have some seminar type stuff where people can actually, use the talking points and practice with them with each other. And if that's not your cup of tea, there's other things you can do too. We're going to have a couple different things going at once. But the thing is, we're going to have everybody in the area there. And so even if you're just – I know, like, some of my family's coming, and I have some friends that are coming with their family, and, some of those kids will just be hanging out and stuff like that. But, everybody's going to be in the area, and there's going to be something for you to do no matter what you want. And those of us that are focused on the White Genocide Talking Point, this is going to be a big, big event for us.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I believe the event itself will be on the 17th. This is the weekend of the 16th, 17th, and 18th, but the event itself, the big dance, as they say, will be on the 17th.
Yeah, most people probably want to get in there a day before and maybe stay a day after, depending on
the schedule. No doubt about it, but there's I got a lot of listeners in Tennessee. I've got a lot of listeners in Kentucky, and a lot of them probably, some of them would be in an area where they could drive across. That's why I'm saying.
Yeah.
They could drive across the morning of or something. But we're doing some interesting things with this particular meeting. In the last Stormfront meeting, I found out that our enemy, the Pink Rabbits, were able to call in phony bomb threats and were able to call in death threats against the manager of a hotel. And it wasn't investigated by Homeland Security. It wasn't investigated by FBI or even local police. They didn't take it seriously, maybe because it was phony. But I have a feeling if some conservative out there, or even just a Tea Party Republican, called in a phony bomb threat to some leftist meeting, I have a feeling they'd be investigating it. So we're not going to play any games with them, and we're not going to release the actual location till the morning of. And this also gives us an advantage. If there are larger numbers coming, we can have more than one location secure. If we want to go ahead and move it to a more private venue, we can immediately do that. We can also create different participation layers to where you might have to meet at a place. So many different ticket numbers may have to meet at a location to get a wristband to get in. We could do a variety of different things to make sure that this happens no matter what, because I'm not coming down there from where I'm at not having a meeting, and Bob's not coming up and not having a meeting. So we're going to be meeting no matter what. You can just bank on that.
That's right. And, it may take a little bit a higher level of participation by the attendees this time, but that's kind of the price you pay for having your security arrangements and everything. And, I'm really looking forward to a good crowd. There are people who are motivated enough to go the extra mile to make something happen, and, people who want to participate in the meeting too. Aside from the speakers, I know of several of the attendees that I've met before that I'm really looking forward to seeing again. Sometimes you don't see see these people for a couple of years, you know, until the next meeting or whatever. And there's going to be some rock solid good people there. And, you know, I've never met Bob Horse.
No, I've seen him. I've seen him long ago, but I've never met him in person myself.
So yeah, so that's going
to
be interesting.
Talked to him on Skype, but I haven't met him in person, so it's going to be interesting. There'll be people, if any of you guys have seen WhitakerOnline.org, the blog lately, you're going to see something called the Bug Swarm. It's where they're basically taking it to the anti-whites online. And what they do is post the mantra, and then they post a link. That's the particular objective. And then they get in there and really fight it out. We've been doing it for years, but now it's really a formal process that's actually going to get kicked up a notch again. They're going to redo that particular redo that particular part to make it easier. But certain members of the Bug Swarm internationally will be there. There'll be various different people coming in. It should be. From what I hear, the buzz, it should be the must attend event.
Right.
If you've ever thought about coming to an event, if you've ever thought about coming someplace to meet a lot of people that you won't normally get a chance to meet in one place, this will be the place.
Yeah, I can remember the first event I attended, and you know, as far as along white normal lines there, you know, people who are wanting to fight against white genocide, and it was scary and exciting at the same time. And but once things settled down, you know, I really made a lot of good contacts that I've kept with me. And you know, Horace, you've mentioned before that something that our opposition does, the Pink Rabbits, what they do is they network. And it doesn't sound like anything really conspiratorial or something to make a movie about, but it works. If you network, you can work together towards a common cause, and you can help each other out. And the more you network, the more you're going to find somebody who can help you. You can help them. And you know, I try to do this locally. I know a lot of people are doing this locally in the places they live, and it's going to yield some real results here in the next couple decades. But you know, attending an event like this is a great opportunity to network.
Absolutely. Our enemy does two things very well. They network incessantly in spite of ideological differences. They will network incessantly.
Right.
And they are always on some kind of message that's usually a lie. I remember the famous one, and this is a great example of how toxic a consistent message is. Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map.
Right. We've all heard that.
It's not even true.
No.
But if you walk down your neighborhood, and I'll give anyone listening a test. You walk down your neighborhood and you ask them if Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map, and you'll have, yes. It's just they're on message night and day.
That's right.
They lie, but they, you know. This is a thing that we have to understand, that even if you had a forum like Fox News, even if you had an asset like that to put out your message on, if you're not on a message, you're not going to go anywhere.
That is so.
We can have the biggest media online, and we do. We can prove this objectively. but if we're not using it to put out a message for us to take power, we never will.
That's exactly right. And, you know, the Ahmadinejad example is a perfect example of something that's completely – it's not true even.
It's just repetition. It's the broken record strategy that old Bob Whitaker talks about.
On some level, if you hear something enough times, even if you know if it's false, on some level it becomes true to you. And so this is something that we have to not defend ourselves against as much as use ourselves –
This is what we're doing with Bug Swarm. We're doing it exclusively with the media. We're the only ones in the planet that have used the internet exclusively to recruit a group, put a group on message, and to kick out a message. Our enemy is just using the medium, the internet media, as another forum, as another venue like Fox News. We're using it exclusively because it's all we have. And we've been very successful with that thus far.
Right.
So it works very, very well. And that has gotten a lot of attention for good, definitely for the better. But that is what we're doing, and that's the type of thing we're going to be talking about.
That's right. This conference is going to be focused around using the white genocide talking point, and it is reaping results. You mentioned Bug Swarm, and then, of course, I've used it in daily life, and I'm sure you have too. But this morning, I'm on the Don and Derek Black show, and one of our anti-white callers calls in, and he's starting to be on the defensive. He's starting to react to the points that we're putting out there. And, he started saying, well, what about black genocide? The instead of white genocide, you know, you got blacks over in Africa that are dying because of starvation. And I said, well, you know what? First of all, we're trying to get food to them, and their own leaders are starving them to death. And second of all, when this is over, Sudan or Nigeria or whatever will still be 90% black. That's not wiping out that gene pool. Nobody's flooding Africa with hundreds of millions of non-Africans and then trying to blend them out of existence. That's white genocide. That's what's happening in white countries and only white countries. Go ahead.
I love it when they do that. They start justifying genocide. Really, what happens? This is very common. Is when you start talking about white genocide, you start talking about this attempted genocide against our race, what I call the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. When you start talking about it, what they will do is immediately point to something from the past. They'll immediately deny it, then point to a reason why we deserve it. And what I always ask is a question, how can you justify something that's not happening? You just said it's not true. You just said there's no such thing as white genocide, but then you turn around and justify it. How can you justify something that isn't occurring?
Yeah, I hope the listeners pick
up. And then I keep questioning. I keep asking. And now you haven't answered my question. How come you just justified it? How can you justify something that you just said wasn't happening?
Right. He nailed the two essential things that they're going to do there. Horse just nailed them. First, they're going to deny it, and then they're going to justify it. And this fellow did both. He said he actually finished by denying it by saying, "And you're just concerned about a black boy and a white girl getting together." Well, you know, again, and there's a tactic, missing the forest for the trees. You know, they'll try to make an individual thing instead of what we're talking about is a racial group destruction. Race mixing on an individual level may be a personal choice, but race mixing on a national level is genocide.
Let me add in something right now because they're always going to say, oh, you're just worried about miscegenation. I say, well, wait, hold on a minute. First, you flood white countries and only white countries with third world immigration. Then you force integration under the law. Marin County, California has to be forced integrated under federal law in America simply because it's white. And then you push interracial marriage, dating, night and day on every media, even in every advertisement we see. And then you tell us we have an inevitable brown future.
Yeah. Or, you
so
know.
How is miscegenation not part of the picture? And how is this not genocide? And then they'll go on, and I'll just make a point. You know, you say this isn't genocide. You just happen to always argue for a position that always puts us in a world without any white people.
Right. And then
the ideal is to learn from one thing you see about our evil enemy, like the neocons. They don't win arguments. They make their point over and over. And, oh, Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map. They lie even.
Yeah.
Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map. They don't make any arguments. They make a point over and over again. I could walk down the street in my neighborhood right now, and I could get into a fight trying to prove to them that's a lie.
That's right, and it's something you got to keep in mind here. Is sometimes people think, well, we have the truth, we have all the statistics on our side, so it should be easier.
Still got to repeat it.
Yeah,
repeat it.
You got to go over and over again, and it's a job. You know, it's not a fun intellectual debate. You know, I think most of our listeners are pretty smart people, and they probably have read a lot of books, and they like to talk about a lot of interesting things. But this is not what you're doing when you're talking to somebody who's against us. You know, either you're pro-white or you're pro-white genocide. First thing you have to do is put that question to the person, and you can't really have any sort of honest debate unless a person in good faith answers that question. If they in good faith say that they're pro-white, then we can start having a debate. We can discuss about all the things we know. But
yeah, you're either pro-white or anti-white. It's just that simple.
Right.
It's simple.
Well,
I mean,
I like the way you put it, Horace. Either you're pro-white or you're pro-white genocide. Because when there is a genocide going on, you can't be ambivalent. You can't just I have people say, well, I'm not really interested in politics. Well, if there's a genocide going on and you turn your head the other way, you're aiding and abetting.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Our enemy likes to take the high moral tone. We get this a lot when you get the Oh, especially when you start talking about the Jew rabbits, as I call them.
Right.
You know, Bob Whitaker wrote a book called Why Johnny Can't Think, and you can even get it on Amazon used, but the book is brilliant. And one of my favorite chapter of any book, and it's almost an anti-book because it's so easy to read, is basically labels Joseph Goebbels a social critic of the 20th century. And the point he makes in it is that our enemy, the Noel Ignatievs and the Tim Weisses of the world, agreed with Joseph Goebbels. They just disagreed on who they wanted to genocide.
Right.
That doesn't make them morally superior.
That's a great
point. Doesn't
make
them more. They need to get off their moral high horse, and you can point that out to them. You know, and it's a great book if any of you have never read it. I mean, you could read it. If a kid is just learning how to read, you can read it. It is an anti-book, is what the foreword in it, I think is Joseph Sobran, if I pronounce his name correctly. I can't remember exactly who did the foreword, but it's really good. It's a great book. But that's one of the points he makes. You know, our enemy acts like they're this high and mighty, they have this high and mighty moral ideals, but their ideals are not universal. Their ideals are just in white countries and only white countries, and they're actually genocide.
And, you know, one of the reasons that this talking point works is that our people, and that's who we're talking to, we're not talking to anybody else except for our people cannot stand 2 + 2 = 5. When you point out that massive non-white immigration is only into white nations and every white nation, but nobody's trying to flood Africa with hundreds of millions of non-Africans, that tricks something in their mind. Now, you could go on black crime statistics until you're blue in the face and they won't care. But when you say 2 + 2 = 5, you know, we're flooding only white nations with, you know, foreigners and then blending that native population out of existence. But nobody's doing this in Asian nations. Nobody's doing this in African nations. As Bob says, Africa for the Africans, Asia for the Asians, white nations for everyone. Well, that simple one line there, something doesn't connect and people don't, that's a burr under the saddle. That plants a seed in their mind.
Yes, it does. We have a capacity for objective truth like no other, but you have to keep pointing it out time and time again. What you have to understand about the society you're in, the political correct societies of the West, is that they are similar, almost identical to the Soviet Union in one respect. They create a closed system. And our enemy, your opponent will always be arguing from a position that puts us in a world without any white people. That's a dead-end game. They're arguing a dead end. And what you have to do is point that out time after time after time. But when you do that, it creates a feedback, a kink in the feedback mechanism of the system itself. I've given the analogy numerous times, and it's identical to what we're doing. A closed system operates just like a wine goblet. A wine goblet. Have you ever seen an opera singer break a wine goblet? The first thing she does is find resonance. And as she finds resonance, the actual goblet, the wine goblet, you can go to breakingglass.com and actually see the physics of sound. The wine goblet will start cavitating violently, and then she'll raise the volume. And once she finds that frequency, all you got to do is raise the volume, and the thing will shatter. And that's how a closed system works. That's how the Soviet Union came apart. They were pointing out the contradictions, the objective truth. The system cannot hold itself up to the objective truth.
That's right. And you know,
there's a certain kink in this system, and that's in this system is only for white people.
Right. And that's the whole point of the mantra and the white genocide talking point. And since repetition is what we're into here, let's kind of repeat the white genocide talking point. I'm going to explain in my words white genocide. White genocide has two parts to it. Okay. The first part is massive non-white immigration into white nations and only white nations. Now that alone is not genocide. That's just displacing the native population. That's just displacing our people. Okay. But
it's ethnic cleansing.
yeah. But it's not genocide yet. The key ingredient that makes it genocide is assimilation. Part two is assimilation. So massive non-white immigration to only white nations, and then assimilation of the white population into the foreign population. And as Horace has pointed out, you know, a lot of times an anti-white will say, "Well, nobody's putting a gun to your head and making you marry a non-white." Well, no, but, you know, I was recently reading a newspaper, and there's an Ann Landers column in there, and the grandma writing in says, "You know, my friend won't want her granddaughter to marry a black man. I think she's racist. Should I stop being friends with her?" So, you know, here's the dynamic. If you don't want to race mix, you're labeled a racist, and then you're
A Nazi is going to kill 6 million Jews.
Right, and your lifelong friend doesn't want to be friends with you anymore because Dan Landers tells her not to.
What I do is one thing I stole from Northern Europe. The Northern Europe bug swarmers do this all the time. Let's get this straight. And then I will do the same thing over and over again. First, you have third world immigration, non-European immigration, non-white immigration, whatever you want to call it, into white countries and only white countries. Then you force integration. Force integration under the law. I mean, you can't have a white community. It's illegal because the federal government comes in and forces you to take non-whites, like Marin County, California. And there are areas in this in Europe you can point to. Not off the top of my head, but you could get them. I mean, this is going on all over the West. Then you force interracial marriage or attempt to through the media. Every inch of the advertisements, everything's multiracial, multiracial, mixed, 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 mixed. And then you promote a brown future in Time Magazine and Newsweek and everything else, our inevitable brown future of the West. Which part of that don't you get? I will keep doing that over and over again.
Right. Right.
It's just simple objective truth of the situation. And there are various different ways to do it. And I stole that one from Northern Europe, and it's very good.
going back to the 2 + 2 = 5, this is the part of the mantra. And we'll be going over all these things in the seminar, and it won't be just one way. We'll have some audience participation. But one of the things that makes the mantra work is the 2 + 2 = 5. And that is where you say, if I told a black man that I wanted to flood every African nation with hundreds of millions of non-Africans or tens of millions of non-Africans, and then I wanted to assimilate the blacks into that foreign population, what same black man would not see that as genocide? And everybody can see that. For some reason, we're kind of blind to ourselves, so it's tough. It may be a tough initially for people to fully comprehend that there is a genocide going on against our people, because, you know, maybe they live in a gated neighborhood, maybe they live in a part of the country like me where there aren't really that many non-whites. But when you explain on a national level, if we were doing this to blacks, would it be genocide? Yes. If we're doing it to whites, then it's also genocide.
Well, one thing, let me interrupt you, Bree, but one thing you want to do, and this someone that does this very well is someone named Lord Nelson. On my website, whiterabbitradio.net, you can see several podcasts where he did it for bugs. What he does very well is he always asks a question. He asks a question, would it be okay with you if Africans were being flooded with Chinese to the extent that they were going to lose their homelands and someone was going to force blend them out of existence? Would that be okay with you? Will never answer it affirmatively. Well, then why is it okay in white countries? You know, you can ask questions as well, and that's very, very effective to come back and ask a question and keep asking them.
Right.
Because they're not used to that. And one of the big things right now is Tibet. Most of the audience members have led free Tibet, the Chinese. Well, the big deal in Tibet is that the Chinese were flooding the places, flooding Tibet with Chinese, and going to force integrate. This is true. Force integrate the nomad, one of their nomadic populations. It was ruled genocide. So you can hit them with stuff like that. Do you support free Tibet? Why don't you support the same rights and privileges for white people?
Right.
You know?
Right, right. Now let's talk about the power of sound again here. Something that struck my mind the other day. Actually, I was recording a show yesterday. I couldn't think of the guy's name, but it pops into my head now. Alexander Solzhenitsyn. You ever hear of him, Horace?
Sure.
Yeah, he was a kind of a dissident guy in the Soviet Union. He got thrown
very
in the
famous
gulag.
Dissident. Very
yeah,
famous
got,
dissident.
Got thrown in the gulag. And I read right before he died a couple years ago, I read an interview with him in a German newspaper or news online news magazine. And he said, "I'm not afraid to die anymore." And he wrote that final book, 200 Years Living Together, kind of describing the relationship between the Jews over there and the Russians. And, you know, he pointed out who ran a lot of those gulags and everything. But one thing that he said that struck me is he said, you know, when they took a third of Leningrad and threw them in the prison camps, threw them in the gulags, he says, you know, if we had waited for them in the landings of the houses with pitchforks, with bats, with whatever we could muster up, and we had fought them, it would have made it so bloody and so difficult that Stalin wouldn't have been able to follow through with that horrible,
purge.
Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for over there. But he said instead people hid behind their doors while they hauled off their neighbors. Now, it's easy for us to sit here and say, oh, they were cowards. Well, you know, if it was one or two or three people, you might could say they're cowards. But when you're talking about, you know, a whole population of Leningrad or the population of the Ukraine or something like that, it's a more systematic problem. They did not have a consistent message that united them.
That's true.
They were entirely just dealing in a fear-based trance, as you put it. And so, you know, now flip forward to like or flip backward to the American Revolution, you have Thomas Paine putting a group of people on a message, and even though they were completely outgunned, they ended up winning.
That's true. You have to understand, Bob Whitaker will be speaking there. One thing Bob knows all about is how the Berlin Wall was brought down. Bob was probably in an anti-communist group in Western Hemisphere, within America, that was extremely active, the most active in the Western Hemisphere, I believe, one of the most active. And he knows all about it. And that's all they were doing is repetition of a consistent message. And Thomas Paine and the American Revolution, a consistent message just crystallizes everything. It allows different idealists to use a consistent terminology to get out their ideals. You know, right now, maybe you're a white normal writer out there and you want to use our terminology. Well, you use words like – you use phrases like anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. Nazi wants to kill 6 million Jews. Just simple things like that. But when you do it, what really is happening to your work is that you're latching on to an energy flow. And you can go to Bug Swarm. You don't have to listen to us. You can go to Bug Swarm and you can see it going. And what you're doing is latching on to that because these phrases are out there. We are going to keep putting them out there and driving them out there. In my next podcast that I'm doing, not with Truck Roy, but on my own website, I'm going to actually tell you how far my stuff is out there. It's interesting. Pretty interesting what's just happened. But our terminology is getting out there, and you can grab onto that energy flow and use it to exploit your own. It basically takes all these different segments of the white and normal media, all these different variations, all these different ideals, and what it does is it lets each independent one be their own person, be very individualistic. At the same time, it's a united force when you start using the same terminology and using a consistent message.
Yeah, it demoralizes.
Even just not using the message, but a consistent terminology that revolves with that message.
That's
It is amplification, the likes of which you can't imagine.
Yeah, you know, the level on this, the level it affects people on is hard to overestimate because you know, just having the common terminology that is in-group, out-group is big. I mean, it unites people together. What this stuff does when you're using a consistent message is it demoralizes your opposition because you've defined the conflict. You've defined it where they're the bad guys and you're the good guys. And when you have truth on your side, it's really hard for them to get out of that. I mean, when they're basically on the record advocating white genocide for the last few decades, there's not a whole lot of places they can go. And then the other thing is it builds up the morale of your side. You know, I think on a gut level we've all known we have the angels on our side, but actually putting it into words, it brings on your brothers, your sisters, it brings on your friends that, you know, we're sitting on the fence on this thing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, What you just said, I can't really expand on too much.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
We have the angels on our side. That's for sure.
Yes, and if you guys have ever read like The Art of War by Sun Tzu or something like that, I mean, this is the whole point of intelligence or propaganda is to communicate to your enemy that they are in the wrong, you're in the right, you have the angels on your side, and once you demoralize them, they're done.
Well, the reason terminology also, let me add one thing. The reason terminology is important and having your own terminology like anti-white, like white genocide, we own these phrases, we being white normal, the white normal population of the West. Nazi wants to kill 6 million Jews, the jamming associations, all these little things, a consistent terminology is one little ugly fact of political history. Anyone that's ever put an opponent underneath their own terminology, if you're any type of political warfare and you put an enemy underneath your terminology, that person that puts an enemy underneath their terminology will also, it's just a historical and overwhelming trend. That person, that group will have an opportunity to put their enemy under their ideology.
Yes.
Time after time.
Right.
This is a fact in Western civilization. Every single debate with the communists on college campuses in somewhere like North America, the conservatives would win every single debate, every debate, but they lost every single campus because they didn't put the enemy underneath their term. They didn't have a terminology consistently. They didn't have a consistent message. And you were fighting a bunch of neocons, basically, a bunch of little Jew rabbits who would say the same thing over and over again. And even when the conservative could say, well, better dead than red, they would flip that upside down. Better red than dead, dude. And they would just repeat stuff like that. And they took over every single college campus doing silly things like that. But repetition and the power of message and the power of terminology, even look at the word like racist. Before anyone puts you underneath any political correct ideology, they put you underneath that terminology, didn't they?
Right.
That's precisely – we are doing the exact same thing. But for the white and normal.
Right. And let's remember the reason why first of all, let the power of that sink in to you. You know, the Republicans, the conservatives read the books. They had all the facts on their side. They still lost because they weren't willing to do something that they considered to be silly and childish, which is call names, which is defined terminology. That's how powerful this stuff is. It's on a bumper sticker level. It's got to be that short little meme. And that's what really works. We know this after decades of watching it work.
Well, what happened ultimately with the Berlin Wall, and Bob Whitaker's a great example of this. They were doing some of the simplest and what would be seemingly silly things over and over again, just like the neocons. You know, Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the map. They would do over and over again, well, if communism is so wonderful, why do they have to have guards at the border to keep people in? They were pointing out an objective truth. They did that. And then sprung into the next thing you know, the Berlin Wall started to crumble. The thing came down. It leads to one catalyst. The big catalyst just start happening. Things start shaking. Things start moving. It comes with a sound, a vibration that points out the contradiction, the objective truth. And then it's just a matter of the broken record strategy. Repetition, repetition, repetition. And magic, it's just magic. It just starts, things just start happening.
And when you have something to say, there's so much power in that. You know, Horace, I've watched political debates before, like for the presidential office and stuff, and I am convinced that when those people are up on stage, the audience doesn't listen to a word they say. You know what they watch? Their body language, their tone, if they sit down confidently after they said their bit like they just beat the other guy. And that's the power of, you know, on a gut level, I'm talking about on the most primitive level, what we read from people is from the sound of their voice and the power of what they say, we know they've already told us with their voice whether they've won that argument or not. And when you have something to say, when you can beat somebody over the head again and again and again with a talking point, with the white genocide talking point, you know, you're going to come off as powerful to the people around you. When you humiliate an anti-white in front of a crowd, you win the crowd.
Oh, absolutely. That's important, but what's even more important is making your point, because what we've seen is you can actually win. You should be able to do both with enough tools, but if you make your point, you can win argument after argument and lose, but if you can win arguments and make your points, you'll really win. If you can just make your point over and over again, you'll win. You'll win. That's what we do. A consistent message where you're making your point over and over again, you'll win, especially if you have your own terminology.
Well, you know, Horace, before I listened to your show, I understood the power of winning a point, of winning a debate. But after listening to it enough, you know, sound is bigger than that. I mean, the power of repetition. Let me put it to you this way. You've seen the picture, the painting of the founding fathers, or not the founding fathers, but the patriots in the American Revolution, and they're you know, you got the old guy and the younger guy, and then you got the drummer boy out front. You know that guy, the little drummer boy.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. What? Why is the little drummer boy there? Why was there a drummer with every outfit? You know,
I don't know.
The power of sound. No, it's the power of sound.
It's true.
I mean, it's that drum beat, that repetition over and over and over again. It puts everybody marching on the same step. And the power of that, you know, I've always said if we could get, I don't care what symbol you want to pick. You know, you can go a Celtic cross. You can do a Confederate battle flag, whatever you do.
Undercover lover.
Yeah. You could do one of Horace's great symbols on his site. If you could get maybe even 1% of the white, or maybe 10% of the white population to slap that sticker on the bumper of their car, that, just that level of commitment, don't have to say anything to any of their neighbors, don't have to stockpile any ammunition, don't have to do anything. Just put that bumper sticker on their car. Just 10% of the population, we would win this thing tomorrow.
Well, one of the things we've already seen, and this is kind of interesting, is our enemy used to deny there was such thing as race. They actually have stopped doing that almost.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. I had the first time it's happened in a long time the other day. Someone said there's no such thing as race. I said, oh, yes, there is, and I can prove it. I'm giving a speech at a Stormfront conference, and only white people will protest white people trying to meet as white people.
That is true.
I said, you won't see this in Africa. You won't see it in Asia. You won't see it in Mexico. Mexicans won't protest Mexicans trying to meet as Mexicans. White people will protest white people trying to meet as white people.
And advocate for white interests.
They just looked at me kind of stunned. But that's the type of stuff that we do over at Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar, which is just an objective truth pointed out. But that is one of the interesting trends, is they basically aren't denying race anymore.
Right.
Which is kind of interesting. That's not happening. You know, race isn't real. We all bleed red. Well, they're not doing that anymore. They're on the defensive on many, many points.
Right. And, you know, when we're making these points, as Horst just pointed out, they're dead simple points. I mean, that point he just made, that only white people will get upset when other people meet to the
only app. White people will protest white people meeting as white people.
Right. Now, that is so basic that most of us have probably forgotten it. But it's simple enough that a 10-year-old...
It's obvious. It's an obvious truth.
Right. And when you point out obvious truths over and over again, it's that drummer boy with that drum beat, and it puts everybody on the same step, and I mean, you got the whole thing won. I mean,
That's my little saying for the meeting. That's what I've been giving everyone.
I like it.
Only white people will protest white people meeting as white people. That's how real race is.
It is. The fact that people don't use this stuff shows that we've been trying to overthink things. And you know, when you try to overthink things or you read too much, then that message that you have, that great book you read and all that knowledge, it's not replicatable. You know, if you have a drum beat, if you have something simple, if you have a mantra, that can be replicated by millions and millions of people easily.
Yeah, you can't replicate. So we got some really, really bright, really great thinkers, and they're unreplicatable. We don't even want to replicate them. We want them out there doing their own thing. We just want to make sure everyone's on the same terminology and everyone is – the many people that want to participate can participate with a consistent message. And there's more than one way to go about it. You can do it online. You can do it at home. You can do it in your personal life. You can also, if you're a pro-white dissident, you can use the terminology in your particular work and feed off that energy flow. We just want to make sure everyone's aware of it. We're not here to really push anything down anyone's throat. We're just here to say this works, and this is what we're doing, and it's really beyond the control of even me or Bob. But we could stop doing stuff tomorrow, and it would go forward.
And that's, you know, that's so critical, Horst, because, I mean, that's something that I personally think about all the time is, you know, I don't really fear dying, and because it can happen, I could get hit by a truck tomorrow. I can't control that. But what I fear is that I am a crucial point in something, and there's not going to be somebody to take over after I'm gone. And maybe that's a little megalomaniac or whatever. But
everyone worries about that in the struggle because we don't see all these people in the struggle, and you worry about who's going to take it up if you don't do your part or whatever, or who's next. But
it's really comforting to be a part of a machine where, you know, hey, if I'm on white genocide talking point and there's a million other people on that talking point, yes, I'm doing my part, I'm pulling my weight, but if I get hit by a truck tomorrow,
go on vacation,
yeah, or I go on vacation
or your power goes out,
that's
or,
right,
or whatever,
then we keep marching on, because
that is the wonderful thing about Bug Swarm. Bob's blog went down for like 24 or 48 hours, and one of the swarmers immediately went to White News Now, and Bob has Bob's barbecue there, Bob's white barbecue or whatever it's called. And they immediately started the swarm there to pick up the slack, you know. They're posting links where they're basically posting the mantra. That's the whole game. Bob wants – we don't have everyone that's posting out there posting it on Bug Swarm, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get the numbers on that. I think our next goal is like what defended ancient Sparta, you know, the Spartan 300.
Yeah.
I think that's what they've chosen. They want 300 actually posting. Every time, when they post the mantra, actually post the link where they posted it. Which is quite interesting. So I didn't even do it at first. I helped getting going on White News Now once I saw what they were trying to do, get the swarm going. That's what it's called, Bug Swarm, and that's what it is. But if you post a link, you'll find all kinds of people come out of the woodworks, generally speaking, and start helping.
Right, and the swarm is the what I want to see. You know, you think of a swarm, it's a bunch of bees or something. You know, you swat one of them, it doesn't matter because there's another 10,000 of them.
It's a big nest of wasps stinging anyone pushing white rabbit genocide.
And, you know, that's so comforting to me. I mean, honestly, I've picked up news stories off of Google News, just random ones, and it have something to do about race in it. And I go down to the comments section, and there's the swarm. There's our guys on there hitting it.
Yeah, if you haven't – what's interesting is – the last four times I've got topics, and I used to be on the swarm back when there was no such thing as a swarm. That's all I did prior to having a podcast, especially a year or two prior to that. That's what we were doing. I was a big offender of not reporting it because at the time they had a Yahoo News group that I couldn't figure out exactly how to report it. Now it's real easy. You log into Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar. You log into WhitakerOnline.org, the blog. And you get a name and a password, and you log in, and you just post a link. But what I found out the last four, and maybe it's even five times, I went to post a link, they were already annihilating it.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't post a link. It was already over with. And it is so refreshing to pull up a CNN article or something like that and immediately see the mantra.
Yeah.
Who did that? Who got there?
You know, it's like and I've gone back to news stories and looked, you know, 24 hours later, and our guys are still on there hitting the comments section. And
they will go to town. They will go to town. But we're looking to increase the participation there. It's not that difficult. It's not that difficult, and it is quite entertaining. It's totally legal, of course. And you can they're trying to say their big thing is we're repeating something too much. But based on me all my life watching our enemy repeat the same thing like racism over and over again, or even the latest, Ahmadinejad is going to wipe Israel off the bat. And seeing their success, we're repeating something. Well, we're not going to stop. We're just going to keep repeating it.
Yeah, when they start,
we're in power.
When they start complaining that you're repeating, then you know you're starting to hit that right resonance.
That's when you need to really start repeating it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Until they scream and leave the room, because I'll tell you what, man. I don't know. I love your show because it's got a lot of the same attitude I have as far as, like, you know, how I see the world. And, you know, I can remember when I was living up in Wyoming and I'm shooting pool and, you know, you're drinking a few beers and it gets to be like 2 a.m. and at the top of the hour that news broadcast comes on the local AM radio or local FM radio and tells you what's going on with the world. And, you know, of course it's false because the bad guys own the media and everything like that. It's a false feeling, but it gives you the feeling that somebody is watching the world. Somebody is on guard. They're watching the walls while you sleep at night or while you shoot pool or whatever. And then, you know, your shift comes on. You take up the baton. It's your duty now. You go on Bug Swarm, or you go on and you're hitting that consistent message, and the battle never quits. I mean, it's a 24/7 operation, and it's not about something that's rebellious or something that's just, you know, fun. It's a duty, and it has the same sort of good rewards you feel whenever you do something else that is your duty and you do a job well done.
Yeah, I still remember, there was a news site in Norway, and someone posted the mantra in Norwegian, and I didn't even think I know who it was, but I remember hitting the link, and you could tell it was the mantra in Norwegian because I have it up on my site, and I'm like, who did that?
Yeah.
It's just funny. It is so funny, but, you know, if you have a concentrated group of individuals, and you don't need – we're only looking – you know, Bob wants 300 – actually, we probably have 300 posting now. He wants 300 posting and reporting it. But that doesn't sound like a lot. But if you look at what they're doing right now, and I don't know if there's any more than 50, 60 on any given day. But if you look what they're doing now and then expound that, it's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot, and it covers – you know, the media right now is basically online.
Right.
We own the net, and we are basically taking control of it, and that's how you do it, with a consistent message. Boots on the ground, as we say.
Right. And, you know, you might have so many guys up on the swarm at any one given time, but the message itself is so viral that once it's been repeated a few times on there, it sticks in somebody's head. They can't get it out of their head. And
the funniest one I've ever seen is when an anti-white said, oh, not you again. He's complaining about it. And one of the other anti-whites, they were making fun of it or trying to make fun. One of the anti-whites says, you know, I would take it serious because it's going to make – they're repeating it, and that makes – they're on message, and this is historic. They're going to make our job even harder. And it's true. That's what we're going to do. We're going to make their lives miserable.
Yeah, I've seen the opposition basically recoil at first. You know, if they haven't heard this stuff before, you know, they immediately realize you're on talking points, and they don't have anything to counter it, and they immediately just go silent on you. And then, you know, at some point they may try to come back against it. But as soon as your enemy completely goes silent on you, you know that you're hitting home. You know, you've knocked the breath out of them.
Well, the thing they're doing now is taking apart the mantra, and I haven't done a podcast to counter it simply because it's so juvenile. I would like to do it live and just destroy one of them over the air, but what they're doing is taking it apart and trying to make immigration more complicated. The problem is they're, you know, Laurier Air effect of Europe and, you know, all these big five-syllable words, complicated immigration, push-pull factors, you know, and no one's flooding Africa with non-Africans saying, you know what, due to the Laurier effect and push-pull economics of immigration, we're gonna flood Africa with non-Africans, give them affirmative action, special rights and privileges, and oh, we're going to create a blended humanity in only Africa.
Well,
see, it doesn't matter what they throw at it. They're always arguing for our genocide.
Well, and the thing is at this point they're on the defensive. I mean,
sure.
By the time they're responding to your talking point, they've lost. It really doesn't matter what.
Yeah,
they
because
say.
There's stuff that you get complicated. Complication does complicated stuff like big detailed immigration arguments based on Laurier effect or whatever he's talking about. Push pull. You're gonna get destroyed.
Right.
By the average 5 year old on message is gonna destroy you.
That's right. That's right. I mean, essentially, you know, white nationalists or conservatives have been in this position for a long time where they've had complicated answers. I mean, if your answer to the enemy's charge is longer than his charge, you've lost. I mean, if you reply with a paragraph.
Actually, their answer to like three sentences of the mantra was literally eight paragraphs.
Right. So you're done. I mean, at that point, I don't really care what those eight paragraphs are.
Yeah. No one can even think about it. What did this guy just say? I mean, he has answered the question. Are you pro-white or are you pro-white genocide?
And the reason why is because, like, if you ever talk to a preacher or something, they will tell you that. You know, 2 hours after their sermon's over, nobody will remember a thing they said in that sermon except for one talking point, one meme, one clever story. This is how the human memory works. People will remember Asia for the Asians, Africa for the Africans, white nations for everyone. No one will remember a two-paragraph response to that.
No. No. No, that's just how it works. That's just how it works. Complication does not, no one remembers anything too complicated. What they'll remember is something, Africa for the Africans, Asia for the Asians, white countries for everyone. You know, that's what they remember.
Well, now, you know, our listeners out there are pretty smart guys, and I think probably most everyone listening to this broadcast is on our side and hopefully going to attend this conference here on September 16th, 17th, and 18th. It's really only going to be the 17th, but 16th and 18th are travel days for you if you like that, in the Knoxville, Tennessee area there. And we're all going to be shooting the breeze, you know, eating some lunch together and talking over these things. If you want to show up there, please do go to the donate button on Stormfront. On the main page of Stormfront, it's on the left over there. Donate $45 and give them your contact information and tell them it's for the conference in Knoxville, and we'll meet you there. But because our listeners, I'm sure, are probably – hopefully they're going to attend this event and they're going to start using the white genocide or the mantra talking points if they're not already, let's give them something a little bit higher. Because, you know, if you go on Bob's blog, he'll talk about the mantra, but he'll also – dabble in some more interesting concepts. And one of the ones that really interested me that he put up there is the idea that if you're building a country, you can either base it on a proposition, you know, like Catholicism or multiculturalism or any kind of ism, or you can base it on the people that live there. And this is kind of epitomized in our founding fathers when they said that, you know, this in the preamble of the Constitution, they talked about America being for themselves and their posterity. And then for in the actual Declaration of Independence, Abraham Lincoln quoted that and basically turned America into a proposition state, said that America is dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now, you can have one or the other, but you can't have both.
That's correct. That's correct. Well, you know, one of them is a founding document of the country. The Declaration of Independence is actually a war document. It's not really the same thing. But, you know, this is another great example of an anti-white double standard. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's in Sudan or Asia. No one else has proposition nations. Only white countries are supposed to be proposition.
Right. Like Soviet Union was dedicated to the proposition of communism.
That's correct.
And you know, of
course, I mean, you really don't see proposition nations. The Chinese are not a proposition nation. Our enemy is not pushing proposition nations based on ideals and based on these wonderful ideals of being American. This is something that happens in white countries and only white countries.
That's right. You know, proposition nations always – well, usually they turn into empires because they're universal. A proposition, you can say, oh, okay, Mexicans fall under this, white people fall under this, whatever, or, you know, under the communists, they want to basically take over all Eastern Europe and put all them under it or whatever. But if – what happens is your people end up becoming slaves to the proposition. In a healthy nation, the government serves the people. The people don't serve the proposition. So, another side effect of this that Bob's pointed out is that you can't have freedom of speech in a proposition nation. And this is the part that was a little bit intellectual, I thought might appeal to some of our listeners because it appealed to me, which is the idea that, you know, you can't have freedom of speech in a proposition country or empire because if you go against the proposition, say the proposition is all men are created equal. Well, if that's the basis of your nation and you using freedom of speech disagree with that, you've now committed treason.
Yeah, well that's certainly true.
Yeah, and kind of almost the reverse of that is if you put a proposition above the interests of your people, then you've committed treason against your people. So, you know, they're so opposite of each other that you cannot do one without cutting the throat of the other.
That's 100% correct.
So, I don't know. I thought that was just a little thought I had that, you know, might tickle
Dan. Bob talks about this all the time. The, you know, the Declaration of Independence being a war document and the Constitution and what the so-called conservatives that never want to conserve anything never talk about is for us and our posterity, what the Constitution means. I mean, there's a reason why the Founding Fathers only let white people vote. In that case, of course, just white men, but they're not letting anyone else vote.
Right. And you know, I mean,
you can't maintain posterity.
To break it down to the most basic terms.
Posterity means kith or kin.
Yeah, yeah, for us and our posterity means for us and our descendants. But right. You know, to break this down to the simplest level, cuz I know some people don't read the Constitution or care about that stuff. Let me put it this way: if I took the entire population of Mexico and put it somewhere else, and then I filled the landmass where Mexico is with the population of Germany or Canada, we all know that that area would now be a first world nation. I mean, it's nothing magical about the soil. What makes a place is the people. And so if you look at, you know, the picture of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, they're all white. They're all Europeans. The ideas that they stood for are can't be carried on by some other people. You can't just take the Constitution. And America has tried to do this. They've tried to take our Constitution and replicate it in Iraq or in some other part of the world.
Well, they'll talk about everything in the Constitution but for us and our posterity. What Bob will keep doing is asking, what about for us and our posterity? Let's talk about that for a minute.
Right.
Because in 1960, in America, just for the listeners know, America is just like every other white country. No one's ever voted on immigration. In 1965, no one voted on immigration. It was shoved down their throats and lied. It was blatantly a lie. But anyways, no one really voted for it. It still haven't. We've never voted on multiculturalism. We never voted on political correctness. But if you're on message, or if you're going on message, if you're on the bug swarm, that's where we're going to be voting.
Right.
We're voting with our mouths.
And this is what practical politics is, because as you've pointed out, you know, Well, like in Europe, I don't think anybody in Europe ever voted on immigration either. Nobody in England voted to fill the country with Pakistanis. That in any poll, in any, not even in any white nation, probably in any nation, if you voted, do you want to be replaced by some other group of people, nobody would vote for it. So why does it still happen? Because you have people on talking points, on consistent messages in key control points in academia or these little social circles or the media or wherever. And that's why the leaders do things that their population would definitely never approve of.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
So, what does that leave us with? What's our job? You know, a lot of times I hear white nationalists say, oh, well, we're going to become, 49% of the population. We're less than half the population. Now we're screwed. There's no way we can win. Well, the big bogeymen of the white nationalists are always the Jews. Well, the Jews are like 2 or 3% of the population. How do they have so much control? Well, networking and getting to control points and using a consistent message. And so,
absolutely. I mean, it doesn't matter what number you are. It matters what you're willing to do with it right now. I mean, it doesn't,
and whether you're all moving to that same drumbeat.
Race is very, very real. I mean, if you start getting a core group on consistent message, which we're doing, you'd be surprised what shakes loose. You'd be surprised. You know, all these numbers, 2050, 2020, 2083, all these crazy numbers when we're supposed to become a non-European country and whatever. Well, the inevitable future. If we had a dollar for every time someone said an inevitable future, it's never once worked. The inevitable future will never, ever happen. It'll always be someone white making a difference and something big happening. I mean, where we're meeting, we're having a meeting in Tennessee. Several hundred years ago, that place was occupied. This whole entire place was Indian, occupied with Indians. And those Indians, despite of what you see in the movies, weren't all that peaceful. They weren't pleasant. And, you'll get around White Rabbits and, all hope was lost because the Indians outnumbered us in the suburbs 1,000 to 1. Now, of course, where we're having a meeting, all hope is lost for the Indians. That's how things work. But, you can always go into this all hope is lost or these inevitable futures. I mean,
that brings up another point that really it's only white people that can be our enemy.
Sure.
Or people who look like us. People who look like us but have no loyalty to us.
Right.
Because, when it comes down to it, really, somebody let these Mexicans across the border. They didn't come across with grenade launchers and AK-47s and tanks and take this country. They were let in, and that's where the traitor lies, is on the inside there.
We never voted on any of this stuff, so they can't say democracy, because if they were big on democracy, and I don't care what white country you're listening to this in, you can be listening to this Norway, you can be listening to Sweden, you can be listening to this Germany. Or even Russia. No one's voting on any of this stuff. So they can't say democracy, because in a democracy, we'd get a vote. If they voted on immigration tomorrow, if they voted on political correctness, or even if they had an up or down vote on affirmative action in America, they lose. They don't want that. They don't like democracy.
No, which, makes you kind of scratch your heads when they're trying to do democracy in the Middle East there. I mean, you've made some great points on your show that if you you give Syrians or you give Iraqis the right to vote, they're going to vote in some things that are very unhealthy for Israel.
In Egypt, you got the Muslim Brotherhood, and they're going to vote in the Muslim Brotherhood. And the Muslim Brotherhood, they said, well, you can't technically stand for elections unless you're nice to us. And this is what the Anglo-American elite said. The American elite said, you're going to have to redo their message. So they just redid their message with a wink and a nod. Now you're voting in the Muslim Brotherhood. Actually, what they did was they made an individual, I can't think of his name, actually quit the Muslim Brotherhood so he could run. Well, it's like making me, okay, you can run for office because you're shoo-in. We can't really stop you, but you're going to have to quit the Muslim. It's like me telling you, okay, Chuck Roy, you're a shoo-in.
But you can't post on Stormfront anymore.
To meet our standards, to get elected, you can't post on Stormfront. Yeah, you got to denounce your Stormfront. Okay, fine. I'll double top secret denounce it. It's been disastrous, actually.
Well, I'm sure that you'll be coming out with some podcasts with some more great commentary on the world events.
Yeah, I've got some coming up in the next 72 hours. We're proofing them right now. So
excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you down there at the conference, Horace. And
as everyone out there listening, be there. This is the one to be at.
Yes, indeed.
This is the one to see or be seen, to hear, to be heard. This is it.
That's right. And, you know, I mean, Bob Whitaker, I mean, how many conferences does Bob Whitaker come to?
None. He's retired. Yeah. He's coming out of retirement.
Yeah.
He pulled me into this one, so this is epic.
Yeah.
This is epic stuff. This is the biggest thing happening since the American Revolution. Since the American Revolution.
That could be true. So, all right. Well, we're out of time, man. But it's good talking to you, and I'll be eagerly listening for those next podcasts coming out.
Will do, buddy.
Talk to you later. For all the listeners out there, until next time, walk tall, stay proud, and don't give them an inch.